I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1961. The artist John Brandt and Del Close, the other way around, Del Close and John Brandt. The album How to Speak Hip, and my guest, Dan Bacadall, is back.
Yeah.
So, How to Speak Hip is one that I have been, when Matt Besser was on the show, he's like, that's what I want to talk about next. I'm like, I don't know what that is. I look it up. Turns out my buddy Taylor, friend of the show, has been on the show a bunch, cleaned it up. Gave me a CD. I let you have the CD. Now, had you not heard it before I gave you the CD, or had you been...
You put me in touch with your buddy.
Yeah.
I listened to it a bunch and was like, hey, let's get together and talk about this one.
Yeah.
Then I gave it to Steve Kaminsky, who moved to Idaho with it.
Uh-huh.
And I've not seen the CD since.
Oh,
so
my God.
I went out and found myself a vinyl copy.
Now, do you mind if I ask where you got it?
I believe it was either eBay or Discogs.
Okay.
I can't remember which, because that's generally where I...
It's so shiny and pretty, though.
Yeah, it's really in amazing shape. I was shocked. So the guy, if he was shafting me, he did a great job of shafting me. There's a little booklet inside that pretty much is just like, I don't know if you've seen the booklet.
Mm-hmm.
Or
I have the digitized
CD
version of it.
Yeah,
yeah, and exactly. Yes, also the CD does, yeah.
It kind of... what would you say? Boils down what the album says anyway.
Yeah, 100%.
A lot of the dialogue and conversation and so forth is in here, as well as the quiz. I love the test, is really cool. It's a very unique album because it's I don't know. It's an it's a mock instructional album that, frankly, if this were still a thing, I think you could use it.
Yeah, 100%.
If you could pull it off, I don't think guys like us would look right walking into the hip scene necessarily back then, but it's really spectacular. I listened to it again this morning just to kind of refresh my memory.
Right. Well, what's funny is I've been doing a lot of studying of this one particular comic who I was trying to uncover the identity of, succeeded in doing so, but it's funny because the way he spoke, he was a New York dude who hung out in the Village a lot.
Yeah.
100% this stuff. And it's so interesting how natural that was, but how, like, these two guys are like, this is a very weird way that probably our friends and probably we also both speak in a little bit, you know?
Right. That's the thing I look at when I look at this is they're not necessarily making fun of the hip guy as much as they are making fun of the square guy.
100%.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not Geats Romo, the John Brent's character, that's getting made fun of.
Right.
And they are at times.
Sure.
But it's more making fun of the guy that doesn't understand that cool can mean cool it. Cool can mean it's cool.
Uh-huh.
Or cool can mean cool.
Right, right. It's almost as though the narrator guy played, again, that's Del Close, is willfully obtuse. Like, he just is just doesn't want to participate in the culture.
What I love is that I had class with Del Close at Improv Olympic back in Chicago, but only... two classes, two particular evenings, individual evenings. It's not like I took him two cycles or anything.
Okay, sure.
He died before I even got to finish my actual first cycle with him.
Oh, wow.
But that he preached about playing to the top of your intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And in this album, he has to play the stupid guy.
Right.
He has to play the ignorant guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays it so smart.
Yeah.
So that even when he thinks he's getting something, there's the moment where he's talking about Put On.
Uh-huh.
There's the, what's the track called? It's I love that name. Is Put On, Put Down, Come On, Come Down, Bring Down, right? Is the name. And then they go through the definitions of all those. But when he's talking about Put On, and Geats' character is like, yeah, man, you're cool. You know, I mean, like, you're the hippest cat I know. I mean, like, there is no guy like you, dig? You're as hip as a guy can get. And then Del's character goes, oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Romo. And he goes, see, I was putting you on there, man. He has to play stupid, but he has to play it smart.
Yeah.
And that's the only way he can do it. And of course, you know, Del was a master.
Right. I was going to ask, because I wasn't sure, because I knew of your Chicago training, but I wasn't sure if you'd ever, because some, you know, some people, especially, so, yeah, wow, right up to the end then.
Mine was the last generation that even had him for a class.
Yeah.
I know I've told this story probably even on this podcast before, but we had him on, I want to say Tuesday nights, I could be wrong, and he came into class, he was huffing and puffing, not breathing well.
Mm-hmm.
He at the old I.O. on Clark Street, he came down the ramp, He paused at the bottom of the ramp. He sat at the piano. He borrowed a cigarette from someone, which he shouldn't have done because he had really bad emphysema. And then he borrowed an inhaler from somebody, which I think was also really bad for him. He yelled at somebody for not covering their mouth when they yawned. And then he said, I got to go home. And then someone gave him a ride home and he went in the hospital the next day.
Holy shit.
So, like, we were the last class that had him. I mean, not that's. It's just a matter of fact. It's not something like, we were the last class. We didn't learn anything that day. There was nothing of value there. There wasn't any wisdom. So anyone after me didn't have Dell even for a day.
Yeah.
We were the last ones to get an opportunity to have him, and we had very, very little with him. That was one of the two classes.
Right.
So nuts. It's not a lot to get out of.
Oh, that's crazy. What did you know of Dell Close, though, because when I was in Chicago, which was only for 2 years, it was only for like right after that, it was 2001 to 2003-ish. I wasn't in the comedy scene. I loved comedy. But I do think, like, knowing who Del Close was very important.
Right.
Like, you had to know, even if you weren't in the comedy scene. So was he a legend? Was he a guy you had to learn about? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was there while he was there. Mm-hmm. So when I was in level one with Sharna, and then level two with Kevin, I don't know, it doesn't matter. Anyway, as I went through the levels, he was in the building, and he was sitting at the end of the bar during Armando, so you'd go to Armando, and there'd be Scary Dell, and you'd want to talk to him, but you're scared to.
Yeah.
So we all knew about him. In fact, the other class that I had with him was before I had him as a teacher. He was a substitute.
Oh.
Because, well, he wasn't a substitute. What happened was it was too hot. It was so hot. That our classroom was like in a green room. We weren't even a real class.
Oh my God.
The place was expanding so fast they had nowhere to put people. Okay. So we had a class in the green room of the upstairs Del Close Theater, which was where they did Armando. And it was so hot and there was no air conditioning in that room that they had to allow, we had to go downstairs and take class with Del. So level one was taking a class with level five. And the arrogance and, I don't know, the attitude in that building sometimes of like, you guys are just freshmen type of thing. It really was.
Oh my
God. You know, like there's fifth year seniors kind of bullying you and pulling rank on you. So you go down there with them and they're like a bunch of nobodies. And Del said, let's see what these new guys can do. Let's get you on stage. And he said, now I'm going to tell you one lesson I want you to know is the suggestion. I don't want to hear the suggestion. I don't want this to be all about this. The suggestion is a color, right? And everyone's like, okay. And he said, your suggestion is leather jacket. And we said, okay. So I just thought, fuck it, I'm going to go for it. Because you're only going to get one chance to kind of, I thought, audition for this guy. Level one. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Of course.
I walk out on stage and like light a cigarette and kind of like comb my hair with my hand. I kind of pulled a Fonzie move, right? But I didn't say anything. And he went, stomp right there. Perfect. Male pattern baldness. What's your name? And I said, Dan. And he said, that's perfect. That's what I was talking about. Does anybody know what he was doing? And they were like, well, he was smoking a cigarette. No, God damn it. He was wearing a leather jacket. And I said, yeah, I was. And he goes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Wonderful.
Holy shit.
So I thought, great. And then we did a couple other scenes. It went really well. He was very complimentary to me in particular, which, you know, let's be honest, it's what you're hoping for.
Of course. When
you're taking a class.
Oh, my God.
I had taken classes at other places, Second City and so forth, and you knew about the legend of Del Close, that he was tight with Belushi, that he was tight with Bill Murray, that he had been at SNL and had done so much at Second City and so forth. So you knew this is a guy who knew what he was doing. You knew that he was a fire eater and a circus performer and a monologist and all these amazing things and worked in film and all sorts of great things over the years. So you really wanted his respect and his appreciation. And we went back to our regular class the next week, and Sharna came in and she goes, wow, I understand it went pretty well last week. And we were all like, yeah, it was all right. I mean, he yelled at us a lot and he yelled at them a lot. And she said, wow, one person in particular he pointed out, he called him male pattern baldness. And I was like, oh, yeah. And she said, yeah, he really, really liked what you had to say. I mean, he really liked what you did. And anyway, so I'm thinking like, oh, my God, here we go.
Of course.
I'm going to be playing Armando. You know, I mean, there's plenty of people who never got to play Armando. I thought, holy shit, here it goes. And so I took that as a nod to like approach Del the next week and say, hey, Del, heard you've been telling people I'm bald. That was my fucking opening line, trying to be cool. And no. He goes, it appears I was right. And then he turned around and didn't say another word to me ever.
Oh, my God.
And then, you know, whatever it is, 8 months later, we have him for class. He comes in, he borrows an inhaler, and he goes to the hospital.
Holy crap.
So, you know, my experience with him is very limited.
Right.
But I learned from those who learned from him. Miles Stroth was my mentor, you know. And Miles was, Dell called him his war chief for his, his war chief? I can't remember. I'm probably fucking that up. But he was like one of his soldiers, you know. So he definitely taught the Dell approach, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt like I was in a club that really mattered. This guy's super fucking cool and hard to please, and he likes me, so I've pleased the hardest guy to please.
Yeah. Well, why would you not? I mean, like, I got chills listening to it. I'm like, anybody would want to feel that way. Also, to be fair, like, that's how you get a legendary status, too. This guy pumps you up, and then the next day, he's like, okay, go fuck yourself. He gives fuck yourself,
exactly.
And he's like, oh, great.
That's how he becomes the scariest, creepiest prick in improv, you know.
There's nobody ever describes him, I don't think, with one adjective that doesn't seem possible.
No. And there's a few guys that fit. I think Besser falls in that same category of like this guy we all want approval from. Mm-hmm. And the second we get it, we're like, hey, man, thanks. And he goes, the fuck is your problem? You know, and you find yourself going, oh, what did I do? Dave Pasquese is another guy who you really, really want his approval. And then you finally get it and you kind of go like, hey, man, I'm in. And he's like, yeah, I don't think so. So you find these guys who you know, kind of drag you along and then burst your bubble.
Chicago has this weird way of doing that to you anyway.
It sure does.
It's very much that city.
It sure does, yeah. It's kind of like the mean older brother.
Uh-huh. So this album, how long did you know about it then before? Because I can't remember how it came up the last time you were on the show.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that I had heard about it way back when. Mm-hmm. It was one of those legends that we all heard about while we were there. Of like, you know, he recorded an album.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you don't realize that now, like, I've got a lot of friends that are stand-ups that are able to record albums.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an amazing accomplishment. It's also, it's not what I used to think it was. Like, oh my God, they recorded an album. It's like, yeah, you can record an album.
Right.
It's going to cost some money, but you can do it.
Yeah.
But I just remember thinking, this guy recorded an album with another guy and it was all original stuff. Like, it wasn't like cover comedy, like him doing the best of Pryor and Carlin or something. But I had never heard it because nobody had it.
Yeah.
I remember there was one copy that I saw. There was a guy that worked at the Second City. He might even still be there. And he had a bunch of albums on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
One was the Evening with Mike Nichols and Elaine May. And then the other Nichols and May album.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it hanging here. But anyway, he had those two. And then he had How to Speak Hip.
Okay.
And I remember saying, oh my God, dude, can I borrow that? And he's like, oh, no. That's a collector's item. I can't. And so I'd never heard it.
Yeah.
And at that time, YouTube wasn't...
No.
Is prevalent.
Yeah.
So I would never even have thought to go to something like YouTube and try to search for it.
Yeah.
Even the internet at that point. I mean, we're talking about 2001.
Yeah, no.
My understanding of the internet was not such that, I could look up How to Speak Hip and at least find the liner notes or anything.
Right.
So I didn't know anything about it until you and I sat down and talked and you said you knew somebody had it. And I got that copy and I finally listened to it.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then
that's
when mine moved to Idaho, I discovered the whole thing was on YouTube all along anyway.
What's funny is the copy that you have, which I only found out today because I was revisiting my buddy's redigitization of not only the cover, not only the back, but that entire booklet.
Right.
Apparently the booklet, as is printed in this version, I think, is slightly not how they wanted it done.
Really?
And Taylor had a friend who had a copy of it with Dell's notes on it for how shit should be changed around. So his digital version has it the way Dell wanted
it. Oh my God.
So I didn't even know that until today. So
I love that. I'm sure they're very kind notes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
sure they're very sweet. Shit can this.
What's so funny is like, I only knew Dell. So living in Chicago, I only knew him because I was a film major and watching the commentary to everything that I ever bought, and then watching Ferris Bueller, which is one of my favorite movies.
Right.
Maybe not a great film, but then they're like, and then John Hughes is like, yeah, he's this legendary guy. And I'm like, oh, wow, I'm an idiot. I didn't know who this dude was. And I'm living right down the street from.
You know, I feel like Dell was legendary in the way that you know, before Marc Maron became the Marc Maron that he is now, Marc Maron was legendary.
Yeah.
He was legendary amongst those in comedy, yeah, but my mom would him. Never have known who he was
100%
until WTF and Maron, his IFC show.
Yeah.
But before that, she didn't know who he was. She'd never even heard of him.
Right.
And yet he was a legend.
Yeah.
You know, and there's that happens a lot. You know, I feel like on a much larger scale, like Frank Zappa is that in music in a way where it's like people have heard of, but they've never heard.
Yep.
100%. Frank Zappa. They've just never listened. They don't own an album. They don't have any friends that own an album, so they've never heard it. They've never heard the genius. Talk about comedy.
Uh-huh.
We should sit down and talk about a Zappa album sometime.
We should, because I've never heard any
of my God, there's real comedy in there.
This is what people say. And I mean, honestly, I held off on listening to this until today because I'm like, well, but by the time we finally get to it on this fucking show, 6 years after I found out what it is, I want it to be as
fresh
as possible. I can't stop staring at the cover. The art is so good. I don't know the name of the artist. I couldn't find his credits. It could just be the art department, but
yeah,
I don't know if either of them were artists. And
I know it could even be Brandt or Dell. I don't think it was Dell because so much of what he did and had, you know, after he died, all of his stuff came to IO basically. So if he did draw that, there would be some other drawings of that nature there.
I didn't think about that.
There's the little booklet inside, which is a unique thing. It's like Kiss. Like Kiss used to hand out, there was booklets and pop guns and tattoos and shit inside. But this is like an actual, like, remove this handbook from the album and carry it with you.
I love
it. And the
it.
Whole, the dictionary in the back, the definition of terms, definition of hip words and phrases.
And I honestly...
And the little drawings as well that accompany them.
When I originally thought or heard of this, I assumed it was a pretty straightforward, you know, guy talks about thing, a guy gives one definition, hipster gives hipster, or he says word, hipster does a definition or a translation of. But there's a lot of conversations.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how written it is. I can't tell because it's very conversational, so there could be some improv. I don't know if you've ever heard.
Well, here's what I found out was that John Brent was also a Chicago... he wasn't a Chicago-based, but he was a Second City guy.
Okay.
And I didn't know that. I'd never heard that conversation.
Right.
But it's in the liner notes.
Okay.
When I was reading those last night, I guess, and I realized, God, he did Second City. So he did Second City Reviews and then left Chicago, and then Dell started doing Second City Reviews after they did the album together.
That's so funny.
So by the between making the album and releasing the album, Dell started working there and John left Chicago. So I'm sure there's quite a bit of improvisation, if not in the actual recording, because who knows how hip Mercury was with that idea. I think I'm sure there was in the creation of it. But there's all those little sketches in it. The party scene, if you recall the party scene where... Geet says, look, man, it's supremely unhip what you had me do, where you gave me your little recorder machine and you asked me to take it to a scene. And then he takes it to a party and you hear him walking around the party, you know, recording people's conversations. And then there's just weird, weird shit there, like the story of the show. The guy, a guy rented Carnegie Hall and then he made an advertisement that said, he is coming. He is coming soon. You know, 2 weeks later, he puts up an advertisement that says he's coming soon. Then 2 weeks later, an advertisement says he is coming October 4th. He is coming tonight. And then they sell out Carnegie Hall and everyone packs the hall and the curtains open. And there's just a sign on stage that says he has gone. And there's no, they don't dissect that.
Right.
They don't tell you what the point of that is or anything. It's just like a random conversation from the party that Geets quote unquote carried the recorder into. And there's all the party noise in the background. The woman, there's a woman that's incessantly like cackling, like a like a fever dream in the background thing. But you can also hear in there that Dell plays different characters. So it's like John plays one character throughout, I feel like. He might play others in the party or when they're on the street.
Sure.
But it sounds like Dell's the one who changes voice and plays different characters throughout, which I thought was really cool, too.
Yeah. Did you... So, you finally heard it when I got you that copy. Was there something that stood out to you? Did you go out of your way to take the time to just sit and listen to it on your own? Give yourself, like, the space to listen to it?
Yeah, because I you know, there's so little of Dell out there. There's The Blob. There's Ferris Bueller's, as we already discussed. There's The Untouchables. Mm-hmm. But it's all small scenes of this really... He's enigmatic, you know? Yeah. He's got a very strong energy, and you feel like, why didn't he get more work? Well, you know, he was probably wasn't easy. Yeah. But he did a lot of stage work, but you can't see any of that. Mm-hmm. So there's very little of Dell life to breathe into a performance that you can listen to or watch, mm-hmm. right? So to finally get an opportunity to sit down and listen to him as a younger man than I am now mm-hmm. was really, it felt like a very special opportunity for me to kind of be like, here's where Dell was back when he was young and firing on all cylinders and super sharp and way smarter than I'll ever dream of being. And it's also a slice of time. Like, it doesn't necessarily hold up in content, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just not, it doesn't apply to the modern day, but it holds up in terms of its style, its approach. It made me think I'd love to figure out a way to turn this into a television show.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know, like the square and the hip navigating the world together, finding a way to, you know, stumble through each other's universe.
God, what would that even be? I love that idea, though.
I've thought about it 100 times. I don't know, I got nothing. You know, I mean, I suppose you could just make a film mm-hmm. of the actual album.
Right.
Then why? Because it already exists. Mm-hmm. And the pictures you paint in your head while listening to it are so much more rich than what you'd probably be able to pull off.
For sure. I like that the party stuff has a weird way of breaking this up. Because, again, you do expect it to just be pretty two guys in a room.
Yeah.
And then it's all of a sudden not that at all.
Right. There's the two places where it breaks up. One is... Mm-hmm. where Geats says, hey, you gave me that recorder and I took it to a party because you asked me to, and man, I could have lost all my cool for that. And you only get so much cool, man. And then the other is when he puts a very convincing fake beard on me with a microphone hidden in it. And then the first thing that happens is a guy walks up and goes, hey, man, who's the cat with the microphone in his beard? Where he takes him out on the street and interviews random people and kind of mm-hmm. like, walks around and sees the world as the hip see the world.
Right.
So I love that they did that too, because because it's almost like they're giving you a practical guide
mm-hmm.
How to take it out into the world. I wanted to look at the liner notes again to look at the tracks.
The liner notes also mention, I mean, and it's a further indicator, of course, on as to what side these two guys were in real life. Like the notes about their references, like there's a ton of Lord Buckley references and things like that, where it's like, these guys obviously knew their shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I don't think they were coming. Well, that's why I say, I think it's, I don't know. It's funny how it's definitely, this is the kind of thing that would be made today and mm-hmm. the people making it would be making fun of the hip.
100%. Yeah.
You know, whereas these guys were going, well, let's make fun of the square because we are in.
Mm-hmm.
So they do, they say like, okay, well, it's uncool to say that you knew Bird. Mm-hmm. It's even more uncool to say that you have Bird's axe. And, like, the first time I heard it, I thought, well, Bird, are they talking about, what's his name?
Charlie Parker.
Yeah, Charlie Parker.
Right.
Or are they talking about someone else? Uh-huh. And then they said axe, and I thought, well, I know an axe is a guitar. I suppose it could also be a saxophone.
Right.
I suppose that's probably what they're talking about. And I thought, man, I'm colossally uncool in that moment, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, they do, they use a lot of the jazz lingo mm-hmm. and so forth.
There's a weird line that is drawn. There's not a lot of successful comedy that does what I, again, assume this was doing, which was making fun of the hip, but obviously you're right. Like, there's pretty notoriously, Stan Freberg actually did hate pop music.
Yeah.
And his parodies of pop music were done with absolute hate, which is so weird to me because they're pretty good. They're pretty good, his parodies were. But then, something like this can carry a whole album where there's no vitriol. It's just, it's very fun. It's very, it specifically is mentioned in there that Dell likes to meditate, which I'm guessing is legit. It seems like.
Yeah, I don't know if he was necessarily a meditator as much as he was probably a nodder. Uh-huh. You know, like, I love they talk about that too. Like, mm-hmm. the one thing where he says, you know, a guy comes up to you and sit, like, when they're talking about the brush off, mm-hmm. right? Or mm-hmm. the put down. I can't remember which, but it's like, the guy comes up to you on the street and the cat says, hey, man, got any drugs? And, you know, before you put him down, you would want to brush him off. So you would walk away, right? You know, and it's, they talk about drug culture a lot mm-hmm. in it, and Dell has to play the guy who doesn't know anything about drugs, whereas in reality,
yeah.
he knew plenty about it. So when uh-huh. I read that too, and I saw that he likes to meditate, I thought, hey, that's something we should ask Sharna. Was Dell a meditator?
Right.
Again, remembering that this album was made, if it's 61,
yeah.
probably recorded in 60 anyway, mm-hmm. or the early 61,
mm-hmm.
at which point she's a 10-year-old, mm-hmm. so she doesn't know
yeah.
for sure. But she could probably tell you if he meditated later in his life, which
right.
I don't know that he did. I don't remember reading that in Guru.
StolenDress.com is proud to present Of Dice and Dens, a D&D podcast, starring...
Navia the Centaur Fighter.
Eloshana.
Fiznik the Warlock.
Grin Goodputz.
What's his name? A time-traveling cowboy.
And your dungeon master, me, Dan. Join us as we fight wolves.
So the green light leaves your fingertips, enters the face of the wolf, and then it explodes.
Explore creepy places.
The fog gets thicker as you walk toward the building. Suddenly a giant claw emerges from the fog and grabs at you. It dissipates as quickly as it appeared.
This will all burn off by noon.
And generally keep it classy AF.
Y'all don't need a shave, corner.
Oh, well.
Did y'all shit in my corner?
So visit odndpodcast.com or find us on Apple Podcasts and Google Play.
Do you have a favorite particular bit on here?
Yeah, I definitely, the come on, come down, bring down, bring, shut yeah. up, shit down. Let me see, put on, put down, come on, come down, bring down. I love that one.
Uh-huh.
And the riff, too, is a uh-huh. really cool track. The riff is the one where he says, all right, man, I took the recorder to the party mm-hmm. and here's some riffs that people had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing, again, listening to it even this morning, it's not a kind of thing where I felt like I go, okay, stop there, because the whole thing is one big, huge, long joke.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That I felt like, well, just one more track, because it doesn't really, it's like a Pink Floyd album. These mm-hmm. aren't really tracks. This is a piece.
Right. Yeah, know? That's true. Because I found myself like, first listening to it, I'm like, I'll pause here and you know, just to go, because I had to get out of the room or whatever for a moment. I'm like, oh, this is the end of a track, fine. But it didn't even need to pause track to track. It doesn't need to have a track listing except to just delineate what particular gag they're doing, I guess, in a
right.
moment. It could have just been one long Pink Floyd style.
Yeah, I think so. And it's funny, even on the album, you can see, you know, there's those black spaces
mm-hmm.
where, but there is no silence in there. So what right. they've done is they've just separated the grooves there.
Yeah, okay.
So it looks like it's an act break or a bit break, but yeah. really what it is it's still playing through that groove.
That's interesting, yeah.
It's just transitioning.
Right, right,
which I thought
right.
was really cool, because it's like if you tried to find a track, you're always in the middle of a sentence because
yeah,
there
huh.
is no... There is no hard break.
That's
It'll
funny.
Go, boom. I love, that's one of the bits I really love uh-huh. is that the Stan Freberg Deo
uh-huh.
video. You remember the video?
I don't think I've seen the video, actually.
You
I
haven't
feel like
seen
an
it?
Idiot.
Hey,
no,
man.
Really
no,
it.
I don't dig spiders, man.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen it?
No,
oh, you
I
gotta,
mean, I've heard it.
Everybody
so
needs to
I've
look
never
that
seen
thing
it,
up.
Oh, my
that
God,
we'll
okay.
do on our next one.
All right.
That itself, the banana boat song is Deo. Hey, man. The bongo player keeps stopping the singer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What was my point, son of a bitch?
We're talking about tracks in between, in the in between, but there's the bong noise.
Oh, the bong. Yeah. So there's this. There's boom mm-hmm. to signify they're going to move on to a next part.
Yes, right.
And eventually, Geets goes, "Hey, man, does that guy have to keep hitting that gong like that, man? It's very unsettling. It's harsh in my cool." And it parallels the thing that Stan does in his Banana Boat song.
Oh, yeah, huh. Okay.
Which, I don't know, maybe that was originally just a recorded bit that someone animated, but it's the bongo player
mm.
telling the calypso singer to stop singing so loud. Like leave the room, man. Oh, you want me to, like, leave the room? And he leaves the room. How about this? Further, man, further. So he's finally right. out of the room because he keeps telling him he's too loud.
Yeah, I have heard that, but I did not know that anybody had animated it. I don't.
You got to see it. Yeah, it's pretty great.
That's pretty awesome. That's very good. Boy, I'm trying to think. What else? Do you mind if I actually look at it? Because I've never held it. I will not fuck it up.
Absolutely. I'm not worried about you.
God, it's so pretty. So the cover, it's like a cutaway of a gentleman in his brain and the words popping out of his mouth, although he still has shades on, which I love. And you have to call them shades.
Yeah, it's uncool to wear shades after sundown unless you have to wear shades after sundown, in which case it's cool, not uncool not to.
This is such a, I don't know, it's just such a modern looking design.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, I know it's from the 60s, but it's just so clean, which is not, I don't know. I don't have any album from this era that looks so deliberate.
Well, they're not usually that slick.
No.
That's one of the things, like, I looked at it and I thought, huh, did I get had?
right.
But I don't know. I mean, like I said, unless somebody did a really great job of printing everything.
Man, it's so nice. I wish I knew who did the actual art. But yeah, obviously you have not taken the booklet out, smart man, but
no.
I guess one could.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how Taylor, now I want to know how Taylor cleaned it up, to be frank. I really wish there were credits in here. There's just so much in here that is just, they've written an entire, what, 1, 2, 3, 8 page booklet?
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow. When you got this, did you read through the entire thing?
I did not. I just put it on the turntable and listened.
Yeah.
Generally, when it comes to a record, my first order of business is take it out and make sure I didn't get had.
Yeah, fair.
You know, look at it and go, all right, this looks like it's going to play all the way through, because something with a long scratch through it that's just going to bounce across.
Mm-hmm.
And then I often, if it looks dirty, I'll give it the wood glue treatment.
Oh, yeah. Does that work?
It works really well. But I've rarely have to do that, and I'll almost always give it a first listen anyway.
Sure, sure.
So with this, I probably just hit it with a little tap water and ammonia dilution.
Really? Okay.
Hit it with that and then give it a little soft rub down and then let it play and listen. All right.
I did not know that you were that picky about that much of an audiophile. This is not something we've talked about.
No, before. We haven't.
All right.
No.
All right. You're a very picky listener. That's good.
I'm not. I don't necessarily shop for, I want a unique one. I don't give a shit.
Uh-huh.
I'll buy Boston, Don't Look Back, and I don't care what pressing. It doesn't matter
to
me.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it comes to something like this, I purposely wanted to make sure I got a good one,
mm-hmm.
because I feel like, well, it's a collector's item in the first place. There's mm-hmm. only so many of them out there. They're not going to be reprinting this anytime soon.
Exactly, exactly.
Unless John Brent is alive and somehow assassinates someone important.
Unfortunately, he's not either. He died in the 80s. His son is still around. I looked that up today.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to hunt down his son. Not in the assassination way, as we were just discussing. I want to hunt him down and talk to him. Oh, crap. What the fuck was my question?
You asked if I had read the booklet right away.
Yes, right.
Off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not. But I did read it all the way through last night.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I had thumbed through it before, but last night I sat down and thought purposely, let's read this thing. And I went, 90% of this is stuff that's on the album.
Sure. Yeah, yeah,
which
yeah.
is, I thought was really kind of cool. Like, they kept up the facade of, now you can go out in the world and speak hip.
Right.
Take this booklet with you. Keep it in your sack.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
I love it. I mean, I guess you could make that, a booklet like that, supplementary. Is it word for word, or is it an approximation?
No, there's an approximation.
Okay.
Like, there's the, like I said, the uncool bit where he talks about, I can't see anything without my glasses. Cool in theory and practice.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So in the album, Geats goes through cool versus uncool.
Right, right.
And then in here, they just take a few of the bits. So it's, the following list may prove useful. Uncool refers to actions which are socially inappropriate, gauche, foolhardy, or dangerous. The following list may prove useful. It is uncool to claim that you used to room with Bird. It is uncool to claim that you have Bird's axe. It is even less cool to ask, who is Bird? It is uncool to nod on the street waiting for the light to change. It is uncool to let anybody know that your uncle is a registered pharmacist. Now, in that bit right there, in the mm-hmm. pharmacist bit, the next thing he says is, in fact, it can be quite uncool for the entire family, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I look at it and I think, like, well, is it uncool? And I know I'm overanalyzing something, but
uh-huh.
is it uncool to tell people your uncle's a pharmacist because then they're going to bug you for drugs?
Right.
Or is it uncool because being a pharmacist is a square thing to be?
Right, right, right. Holy shit, I hadn't thought about it that way, but I love that.
Because my thought, I mean, nowadays, pharmacists, I mean, these guys are being, they're up there with with the Al Capones and the Scarfaces today. Like the number one drug dealer is the pharmacist.
Do you think, and again, I don't know how much everything they said was written. I'm sure in there's a credit that says written by Del Close and John Brent, but if they have this improv background, I'm curious if some of that's in there. But also, I can't tell if Del Close was a guy who did second thoughts in terms of comedy, because he seems like if he's a guy who gives you a thing and says, leather jacket, you do a thing, great, let's go with that. Improv people tend to be like, I'm going to stick with what I just said and we're going to keep fucking going. I just wonder if that translates to something like this that is probably pretty heavily written.
My guess, I mean, I'm only guessing, but, you know, since John had been working at the Second City at that point and Del was about to start working at the Second City at that point, my guess would be that probably came into play. Mm-hmm. And the Second City approach to things, as it's been taught forever, mm-hmm. Alan Arkin came and did a workshop with us at the Second City back in 2001. So it was Alan Arkin when he was still just that dude from Freebie and the Bean and some other stuff. It was before he had his rebirth, you mm-hmm. know? But I was a huge fan because so much of what he had done in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. But so he came and talked to us too. And the approach was always the same, which is, you know, you'll get an idea. You and I would come up with an idea, or I would come up with an idea and go, Jason, here's my idea. We're both pharmacists and we're fighting over who gets to write a script for this beautiful woman that we've always got our eye on. Mm-hmm. Today is Tuesday. So let's say Tuesday is your day, mm-hmm. right? So let's have that conversation. Let's go.
Right.
And we do it. Yeah. We have fun with it. Then that night we do it again in front of an audience. But again, we haven't scripted anything other than giving each other the scenario.
Sure.
Right? And then we go for it in front of an audience, and the things that get laughs, we're going to try to keep.
Yeah.
Now, the approach when I was there was VCR. They had, they still had VCR, and they had a camera up in the back, and they would record the whole show. Mm-hmm. And that night, whoever was in the scene, you and I would sit down, look at the scene, and go, that moment worked, we'd write that down. That moment worked, we'd write that down. This connective tissue is essential, so we're keeping that as well. Okay, tomorrow we try again, mm-hmm. right? So I would bet that maybe not in the actual recording, because again, back then, you know, recording an album was, as particularly for a label like Mercury, mm-hmm. is not going to be something that you're just going, hey, give us a minute to fuck around in here.
Yeah.
The studio time costs money, and I'm sure that they had to come in prepared to go.
Yeah.
But I'd be willing to bet that the building of this thing was done with a lot of improvisation.
Right.
And there's got to be somebody, an engineer, a producer, a somebody out there who's still alive who knows something about it.
Yeah. I will ask Sharna what she knows, and then I'm going to have to do some digging, because I'd like to know, because again, it could say written by, that doesn't mean anything.
No.
Especially with these two guys.
And especially back then.
Mm-hmm. And there are plenty at this time. Again, there's Nichols and May. There was the Second City album that was released around the same time, too. There's The Committee. There's all these other albums that were at least improv-based, at least formed in improv. I don't think, because I think now people treat podcasts as the place where you go and do improv. I don't know that there are any comedy albums that are formed in improv anymore, because there's not a lot of sketch comedy out there.
Right.
Because this is basically sketch comedy.
Because
I can't think of anybody who's done that. Like, because they don't need to. They just improv on a podcast.
Right.
Have you done improv on podcasts? I'm curious.
Like a fully, like doing a scene, mm-hmm. like improvising? No, I haven't.
Okay. Because I mean, I know a few people do it, but I don't know what the experience is like other than just listening to it.
Well, I know that there's, what's his name? Paul, God.
Paul F. Tompkins?
Yes. Paul
F. Tompkins. Spontanea Nation?
Yeah. He mm-hmm. does, and he does the, what's the radio plays that he does?
Oh, crap. Yep. Thrilling Adventure Hour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's improvised too, isn't it?
It's written, but I know that, I feel like they actually have started doing improv as a group, though, some of those actors.
Yeah.
So, and then there's like Besser has Improv for Humans and stuff. There are a few like strict, this is an improv podcast.
Yeah.
And then there are other ones that are kind of have like Comedy Bang Bang has an interview as its basis, but then it's improv on top
right.
of it. But it just seems like no, they're like, well, I'm burning all my improv on stage or in podcasts. Why do an album? Because it's expensive.
Right.
I guess that's it. I don't know. Have you ever been on a comedy album? Because I like to ask that of people sometimes.
No, I haven't.
Okay. Because every once in a while I'll run into somebody who's like, yeah, I did like a background voice on like a...
No.
Yeah, okay.
No, I've got plenty of friends that have.
Yeah.
And every time they release an album, I'm like, Matt Dwyer released an album. And I was like, what the hell? Matt Dwyer's got an album?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like when a good friend releases an album, it still flips my wig, you
mm-hmm.
know?
I really like when they release them on vinyl, but it's obviously so fucking expensive.
But nowadays it's more common.
It is, yeah. So I'm hoping that makes it cheaper at some point.
Some eventually, you know, but they're also going to go, well, this is a way to make money. I mean, the company, I don't feel bad for the record companies. I feel bad for the musicians out there because mm-hmm. their only real way to make money now is to go on the road.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what's happening for comics too. Like they make a lot of money by going to a town and doing two nights at a big theater.
Mm-hmm.
Traveling sucks and all that, but they're not going to sell a lot of albums and not going to sell a lot of downloads either.
For sure. That's true. Okay, I want to ask you why to recommend this album if somebody's never heard it. Because I think it's pretty easy to say. A lot of people probably don't know who Del Close was.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know?
I think the reason I would recommend this album is because it's like nothing you've ever heard before.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the predecessor to a lot of Pedro and the Man bits mm-hmm. For Cheech and Chong, whether they knew it or not.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's a predecessor to a lot of sketch comedy duos, but these guys did it in a way that they're both playing a character.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, well, I mean, I guess Cheech and Chong were playing characters too, sure. You know, but it's not like it's Del and John there saying, so what do you want to talk about? I don't know. Let's talk about it. Hey, how about we do this bit where we're both, these two characters. Okay, go.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with, hey man, is this going to be cool? I mean, I'm a supremely cool cat, you know. It starts before it starts, which I love. The album starts before the quote unquote recording starts.
Yeah.
He goes, "All right, Mr. Romo, I'm going to interview you now."
Mm-hmm.
And then the album begins.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a slice from another time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think the same way a lot of like Smothers Brothers and stuff like that, like mm-hmm. if you listen to it today, you might not necessarily feel like it applies to today's world,
sure.
Although I'm guessing Tom Smothers applies forever. But it gives you an opportunity to look at a different time
mm-hmm.
and to be exposed to something that was, it was real. It was happening.
For sure.
And I think they kind of dissected in a really cool and interesting way.
And it's a different dumb guy, smart guy dynamic because it's very much, you are supposed to assume that it's making fun of the hip.
Yeah.
You're supposed to suppose that it's making fun of young people, of the people who are about to take over. You know, you're supposed to assume an awful lot of things. And I do love that it does say something about Del that he's willing to play the dumbass too. Honestly,
yeah.
Because there are some people who, like, the way people often talk about him is that, you know, he was a blowhard. Like, he was just this rough, gruff
right,
dude.
Yeah.
You would assume then that's all ego, ego, ego. Whereas, like, clearly the comedy was number one.
Yeah, I think the bit is number one.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, that's one of the things Miles passed down to me is mm-hmm. from Del was how you look and how you come off does not matter nearly as much as the piece. The piece is all that matters. If you have an opportunity to get a laugh right now, but it's going to sacrifice the piece,
mm-hmm.
then hold off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's true. I guess that is something that people don't often distinguish, is that an attempt at a laugh is not an attempt at keeping the scene going necessarily. It's
no.
It's for you.
Yeah.
And you don't think about how much all that is ego, whereas, like, I mean, the few times I've ever, like, trained in improv, like, one of the times was, like, no, you're not allowed to... Have you ever done... I'm sure you have, but, like, I had one teacher try and say, tell me to do, okay, I want you guys to do a bit, but you have to make it not funny. You can't
yeah.
get any laughs. And then it's, like, it's impossible. It becomes immediately funny.
If you're playing it real, yeah.
Yeah.
It becomes funny because people recognize themselves.
Mm-hmm.
In the thing, and that's, I think, at least that's, there was an old play called You Know I Can't Hear You When the Water Is On or something like that.
Okay.
And it's about a married couple and anyway. But they talk about the shock of recognition. I think that's the actual name of the play, is the shock of recognition.
Okay.
And it's a shock of recognition of regular actual human behavior when you go, oh, shit, I thought I was the only one. And
yeah.
that's what makes you laugh. Yes, there's other things. Kramer makes you laugh on
sure.
Seinfeld because of how absurd he is or how unpredictable he is, but there's also those laughs of, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
How did you know that's what I was thinking?
Right.
And I feel like there's a lot of those moments on this album.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
For both characters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where you go, God, if I'm this hip guy, I'm so frustrated with this old idiot. And at the same time, what is this young guy talking about? I don't know what the hell this guy's talking about. Yeah. So you feel the frustration of both characters.
Yeah, that's true. At that level of separation, we have that bonus where at the very least, like, we can have, we have a joint experience of, like, I cannot honestly imagine somebody who was what they would consider a square listening to this and trying to make sense of it.
No, they would, I think it would definitely break the brain of someone who was a square. If they were playing the role that Dell plays, they would go, well, this is nonsense. I could just see my dad listening to this and going, all right, turn this off. What is this? The garbage.
You're not making me think. I'd like to do an entire episode of people doing their impressions of Del Close. I'd love to hear people who worked with him.
There are some who are really good at it. I'm fine. Uh-huh. But there are some who nail it because they knew him better.
Sure. Is there somebody you can think of who's got a particularly good?
Ooh. God. I know Miles has got a good one. God, there's just a million of them out there. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got one.
Yeah.
But, you know, the people who spent more time, I'll bet you, I'd be willing to bet Adam McKay's probably got a really good
Christ,
one. He spent an
awful
lot of time with them.
Sure.
And the Ian Roberts and Matt Walsh's, guys like that are going to have good ones.
It is amazing to see the people who learned under him and the shit that has been accomplished.
Yeah.
It's insane. When,
even
to
just
me.
Those, you just look at those three names.
Yeah.
Adam McKay, Ian Roberts, and Matt Walsh. So you've got Adam McKay,
speaks
for itself.
Uh-huh.
Ian Roberts, Key and Peele, Teachers,
right.
All kinds of shit, amazing stuff. And Matt Walsh, Veep, and a million other things.
Yeah.
These are guys that studied under Dell extensively.
Yeah.
You know, Neil Flynn, another guy who studied under him a long time. The guy's been on TV for 17 years straight.
Right.
That's not hyperbole.
No, right.
That's a fact.
17 years straight. Yeah. Starting with, Scrubs, right?
Scrubs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Then middle.
Yep.
And now he's on Abby's.
Fuck, right.
And
yeah.
You go, 17 years nonstop. Christ. And that's one of Dell's proteges.
That's insane. Now, that's a guy. I'd like to interview him. I'd like to interview Matt Walsh, but he scares me. I've never met him in person.
Walsh?
For some reason.
Oh, God, no.
He looks like, and I bet he's the nicest man.
He is.
But he can play intimidating and also play an idiot. But
He is one of the nicest dudes out there.
Of all the people
I've mentioned, I can promise you Matt is the nicest.
Yeah.
Including myself. Like, he is the nicest and easiest going guy.
He does seem like an actual nice guy, but then there's this, like, I bet I'd be scared of him, but that could just
he's
be
a
me.
Really sweet guy. He would, I think he'd put you at ease immediately.
Yeah. God, I actually would love to talk about this more. Is there, you know what? They did do another album, or Dell did another album at least. Yes. I'm going to have to look up what it's called. So we're going to have to do a little bit of hunting. So maybe we have you come back and talk about that one too.
I would love to. I'm going to look it up. See if I can find it.
This is going to come out, not this week, not next week. Following week.
Okay.
So is there anything coming up that you want to tell people about? Where can people find you online if they
can? Yeah, I'm only on Instagram at back at all.
Mm-hmm.
Back went away, never came back at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always see me on Veep on HBO and Life in Pieces on CBS.
Wonderful.
And other than that, I got a few films out there, and who knows when those are coming out. So just keep your ear to the ground.
Absolutely. And then obviously you'll come back at some point.
Of course.
We'll talk about. Well, I will say, yes, Dan is great in everything he's in. And you're very funny on that episode of Veep. I will then also promote my buddy Alan Rickert, who has also had he might have another episode coming up. But he's a reporter on Veep. He got to ask Jonah a question and had a very solid reaction shot. He thought I was making fun of him, but I'm like, no, a good reaction shot is
everything.
A good thing.
I just mentioned Tommy Smothers.
Yeah.
Who made that thing work?
Right.
Dick Smothers with his reaction.
Exactly.
That's what made it work.
100%. And even on the albums, like, it would just be like even a tiny aside or like a little like, oh, you're an idiot. Like it's brilliant. Yep. I am the impatient asshole who always needs somebody to be a better reactor in a scene, and I know it. So, you know, you always need
the audience needs someone who is playing them.
Yeah.
And that's a guy like Dick.
100%. The other album, there we go, yes. Okay, so it's the Do-It-Yourself Psychoanalysis Kit.
Oh, man.
Which is not dissimilar. It came out 2 years before this. And I'm going to have to ask Taylor, because maybe he's got a copy of
it. We have to find it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go look it up.
Yeah, so I can't wait. I've never heard it. I have no idea if it's any good, but I'll bet. Holy shit, it's only five tracks, so they're all very long. So this should be interesting. All right. See, the thing is, this is my style. Like, whenever I think of new comedy albums, unfortunately, my brain is stuck 50 years before, and I'm like, wouldn't it be funny if it was like a guide to this or a guide to that?
Yep.
It's not a thing people do anymore, but my brain
What's cool about that is if it's about psychoanalysis, psychoanalysis was fairly new to the American public at that time. So he's cracking something open that nowadays everyone's got a therapist.
Yeah. Or at least
I do anyway.
Or at least knows what it's about. Like that's when all this stuff was entering the vernacular. And
yeah.
All right. Well, this is what we'll talk about next. I will just promote very quickly. Just follow me on Instagram, Jason Klamm, JASONKLAMM, hashtag the professional blur. That is me making a living as an extra because I just quit my job. So what you need to do is follow that hashtag, follow me on Instagram, and help me just get a book made so I don't have to be an extra anymore. I know that's weird, but that's what you're going to have to do. Dan, thank you again for doing the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klamm. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. You can email us at podcast@comedyonvinyl.com. You can also send snail mail to Stolen Dress Entertainment, P.O. Box 805, Burbank, California, 91503. Subscribe to Comedy on Vinyl on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Comedy on Vinyl, or find everything in one place at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune in to the new Stand Up Records channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast. This episode is also underwritten by $300 Data Recovery. Visit $300datarecovery.com to get a quote on their highly recommended data recovery services. Visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, watch videos, and imbibe freely of our multimedia content going back 15 plus years.